Marisa Robles on the harp. The album was called Clair de Lune, music of Claude Debussy. It's just about 2 minutes past 10 o'clock. This has been Valerie Jean sitting in for Dave Brown, who will be doing my show next Saturday evening at the same time, same place, here at Long Island's first station of the 90s, WUSB, Stony Brook. Right after Stardate, stay tuned for Brain Damage with Eric Corley right here at 90.1.
Sunday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. in the Stony Brook Union Auditorium, WUSB presents a benefit concert with Columbia recording artists Boy Dog Pondering.
Wishing like a mountain and thinking like a sea, how it is to feel absolutely free. Thinking like a mountain and wishing like a sea, how it is to feel absolutely free.
Boy Dog Pondering is an eclectic mix of folk rock and tropical beats and one of the most energetic bands you'll ever see live. Tickets are $8 for students and $10 for the general public, and they're available at the Stony Brook Union box office, or order your tickets by mail by sending a check or money order to WUSB, SUNY, Student Union Building, Stony Brook, New York, 11794. That's Boy Dog Pondering in a benefit concert for WUSB in the Stony Brook Union Auditorium, Sunday, April 29th at 7:30 p.m. Brought to you by Long Island's first station in the 90s, WUSB Stony Brook.
Triple USB.
Okay. WUSB. WUSB.
Hi, everybody. This is Boy Dog Pondering. You're listening to 90.1 FM WUSB, Stony Brook, Long Island's first station of the 90s.
Brain Damage.
Radio Moscow presents Soviet Mass Media Review. In this edition, developments in Lithuania. Another Soviet-American summit meeting draws near. New trends in the work of the KGB. And a look at emigration from the USSR. Lithuania is one of the leading news stories. The proclamation of the Republic's independence by its new leadership has drawn a broad range of comments. Here are some.
A member of the USSR Presidential Council, Alexander Yakovlev, told the Soviet news agency TASS after his trip to Lithuania that developments in that republic could slow down the normal constitutional process, whose results would meet the interests of all republics affiliated to the Union. In his view, the resolution of the Congress of People's Deputies of the USSR and President Gorbachev's appeals to the Supreme Soviet of Lithuania and the Lithuanian people expressed clearly a constructive and responsible attitude. The Supreme Soviet has already passed a law on the settlement of all issues connected with the secession of a Union Republic from the USSR, as provided by the National Constitution. The details of a future new Union treaty are being considered. In such a situation, artificial attempts to speed up the march of events could be interpreted in no other way than a reluctance to have consultations and a dialogue.
Meanwhile, Lithuania's current leaders have been saying that they seek a dialogue with the leaders of the Union. Speaking at a news conference in Moscow, Lithuania's permanent representative in Moscow, Member of Parliament Egidijus Bičkauskas, said,
"В настоящее время особенно важно завязать диалог между..."
It is important today to start a dialogue between Moscow and Lithuania. I will remain in Moscow permanently, and I have been empowered to search for contacts and the beginning of a dialogue on behalf of the government and Supreme Soviet of our republic.
Likely effects of the unilateral proclamation of the restoration of the republic's independence by the Supreme Soviet of the Lithuanian Soviet Socialist Republic are seen differently in the first place in Lithuania itself. A commentator on Radio Moscow said,
"On the face of it, Lithuania's life is calm and quiet as usual. All industries, transport, and educational establishments are working. Yet a certain tension is felt among the people. In some cases, it is fed by various rumors, in others, by the Republican mass media. For example, local radio asks the people to avoid switching off their radios for the night, in order not to miss the moment when the Soviet army enters the city. Generally speaking, the theme of the army is present constantly in news programs. Television programs for several days running opened with one and the same clip showing military vehicles on the march to northern areas of the Republic for exercises going through Vilnius. The local TASS correspondent described these television and radio reports as provoking alarm, and it is difficult not to agree with this view.
However, the press has pointed to a number of real, not ostensible concerns of the Lithuanian society. The haste with which the Republican parliament made decisions during the first days of euphoria have caused serious doubts among not only Russian-speaking population of the republic. Radio Moscow's correspondent has visited a small village called Remenai to find out that some local people have views different from the decision of the Lithuanian parliament.
У нас никто не спросил, но они сами сделали, не сами отделяются.
У нас настроение...
Nobody asked us, a local villager says. They did it themselves and they're separating. Another one adds, we are against that decision. Those in our parliament are in a great hurry.
Soviet mass media have also pointed to ever more frequent calls for direct presidential rule in Lithuania. The newspaper Izvestia has carried a report from Lithuania quoting participants in a rally in support of the Union. They believe that presidential rule is necessary at a time when the Parliament of Lithuania has ignored calls and instructions from the USSR president to avoid worsening confrontation by passing more and more legal acts. A group of People's Deputies of the USSR have shared their impressions after their visit to Lithuania in the same daily.
We are firm supporters of the idea of the right of nations to self-determination, to choosing a type of state for themselves and to deciding their own future. However, we cannot associate the decisions of the current Lithuanian leaders with the will of all of its people. We are certain that the Lithuanian people, just as any other, has the right to decide their future on their own. However, one should proceed not from hypothetical parallels with the past and the idea of occupation, but on the hard facts of today's life. Only that deserves to be called genuine concern for the good of the people. So far, we have been able to derive the conclusion from our talks with the leaders of Lithuania that no models of the Republic's economic development in the context of independence have been considered. The idea of Lithuania's occupation has been causing ethnic tension in the Republic, in the first place between Lithuanians and Russians. The Russian-speaking population is concerned with the lack of information on developments in Lithuania because all programs are in Lithuanian. Besides, many indigenous residents who disagree with the point of view of the leaders of Sąjūdis have been deprived of the opportunity of expressing their opinion in the mass media.
The weekly Sovietskaya Kultura wrote with indignation that the so-called free Lithuanian press, radio and television have described as a traitor of the people and a liar, the oldest Lithuanian novelist, people's writer of Lithuania, Juozas Balčiūtis. His books, not very long ago part of the curriculum in Lithuanian literature, are now being burned in fires in front of libraries in various places, including the capital, Vilnius.
Sovietskaya Kultura writes that the novelist's only fault was that he appeared on central television expressing his attitude to the situation in the Republic. The novelist's statement that Lithuania should not break off with Moscow at once and that hasty and half-baked decisions by the Republican parliament and leadership would not lead to anything good caused particularly angry reactions.
The weekly said that the nationalists were attacking the prominent Lithuanian poet Eduardas Mežulaitis and other distinguished authors in that republic. The slogan, "The one who is not with us is the enemy of the people," known since the Stalinist era, has risen from the dead in Lithuania. You're listening to a review of Soviet mass media prepared by Radio Moscow. There have been extensive comments on the announced date of another Soviet-United States summit meeting. The Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev will visit the United States from May 30th to June 3rd. Interviewed by the national daily Pravda, President Gorbachev said that Soviet-American summit meetings were an important element of world politics.
Frank discussions, President Gorbachev said, help clear up the positions and interests of both countries and coordinate them with the interests of other countries and the world community. The Soviet leader pointed out that President Bush and he himself had a good understanding of each other, and that he hoped for free discussions and for expanding the sphere of influence between the Soviet Union and United States. According to President Gorbachev, the success of the summit largely depends on agreements to reduce armaments and to achieve disarmament.
Asked about the role of European affairs on the agenda of the talks, President Gorbachev said they featured high on the agenda.
Europe is experiencing the most serious changes since the end of World War II. The Soviet Union and the United States are active participants in the all-European process. They also bear responsibility for ensuring that changes here, in the first place, the unification of Germany, should continue along a constructive track without causing any damage to anyone and in the interests of the whole of Europe and the world. This is a very responsible period, and the American president and I have much food for thought.
A summit meeting is a good opportunity to take a look once again at what either side could do to narrow the gap between words and actions, in economic relations in particular. President Gorbachev told Pravda that there was certain progress in that sphere. alas, it was unduly slow. The chief of the Soviet KGB, the State Security Committee, Vladimir Kruchkov, has said at a meeting with a group of Soviet parliament members that his department needs publicity. The meeting followed proposals made by some lawmakers for turning the KGB building in Moscow into a memorial honoring the victims of Stalinist repression. They argue that that building, which became a symbol of Stalinism, must be destroyed or turned into a museum. Stating his view on these matters, the KGB chairman Vladimir Kruchkov assured the audience that the current state security personnel has nothing to do with Stalin's arbitrary rule, and it's senseless to punish the building itself. He also said that the KGB staff is extremely concerned over the issue on perpetuating the memory of innocent victims. However, he made it clear that it's impossible for the KGB to move from its building to a new one for technical and organizational reasons. Besides, this would be too costly for taxpayers.
A press account of that meeting notes that members of parliament put hard questions to answer about the tragic role of the state security bodies in the period of Stalin's repressions, about the restructuring of KGB activities at a time of democratization and glasnost in Soviet society, and about relations between the State Security Committee and separate unofficial organizations. There was also a discussion on new trends in KGB work and ethnic problems. Attention was focused on politics, literature, the arts, history, and culture. As the press points out, the initially formal atmosphere in the conference hall gradually changed to an atmosphere of goodwill. It was obvious that the participants in the meeting sought a constructive approach and mutual understanding.
Ukrainian newspaper Rabochaya Gazeta carries an article by the Novosti press agency observer Vladimir Kucheryans about emigration from the USSR. This is what he writes.
The queue at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow has been getting longer with every day, even though America is only one of four countries, Israel, West Germany, and Greece are the others, where the bulk of immigrants wish to go. But it is this line that makes the situation peculiar today. It means, above all, that there now are more people who wish to leave the USSR and settle in another country. According to the Foreign Ministry in Moscow, if last year the total number of immigrants to the four countries comprised 235,000 people, 237,000 people have applied for entry visa to the United States alone. The ethnic identity of this queue has changed, too. 83% of the applicants are Armenian repatriants. This change of accent least of all means that Jewish immigration from the USSR has declined. But now Jews have been going primarily to Israel. Last year, 102,000 received entry visas to Israel. That was almost 3.5 times the number of those who got their visas in 1988. Soviet Germans have been leaving for West Germany, while Greeks have been moving to Greece. What are the real motives for immigration from the USSR? As the observer points out, social and economic reasons prevail, of course. But not only. There also are religious considerations and a desire to reunite with relatives who went abroad. More liberal rules to emigrate from the USSR have had their effect, too. Under a new entry and exit law, every Soviet citizen will be entitled to go abroad for permanent residence or to work there for a period of several years. No private invitation will be required. Only another country's consent will be needed, and sometimes it takes up to a year for that consent to arrive.
And that ends Soviet Mass Media Review, prepared at Radio Moscow.
I really think they're losing their minds over there in Moscow. But that's interesting theme music to go out on, isn't it?
Phoenix City!
We've got interesting music to come in on. This is Brain Damage.
Coney Island, he had a concession on the boardwalk where you knock over milk bottles with baseballs, which I could never do for my entire childhood. There was a tidal wave at Coney Island when I was a child. It ripped up the boardwalk and did about $1 million worth of damage, houses and everything. The only thing left standing were those little milk bottles. I would say, over-disciplined, which is really humiliating. I had to be home 9:30 prom night. I made a reservation at the Copacabana for 5 o'clock. I took my date, we watched them set up. I was, as a matter of fact, when I think of it, terrorized as an adolescent. I was not that young when it happened. I was, about 13 or so at the time. I was on my way to an amateur music contest. And my family is musical. You should know that. My father used to play the tuba as a young man. He tried to play the tuba. He tried to play Flight of the Bumblebee. And he blew his liver out through the horn. And I'm on the subway with my clarinet, Jerry Jazz musician style, unwrapped and everything. And these 12 guys come running through the subway, but really hairy knuckle types, you know, race through. Apparently they had just come from a settlement house, you know, because they were dribbling a social worker as they went through the car, you know? They stopped right over me, you know, because I was conspicuous, because I had just eaten a seafood lunch and I'd forgotten to remove the lobster bib, you know? So I looked like a farmer with a fat tie, you know, and Neptune on it. They stand over me and they start cursing and smoking and tearing up seats, you know, and I don't say anything, you know. I just sit there and look down, continue reading Heidi. And all of a sudden, the leader puts his finger under my neck like this and goes, "Ow!" I got up. And he snapped his knee up quickly And I refused to give him the satisfaction of doubling over. But I did one of the greatest imitations of Lily Pons you've ever heard. I hit an M over high C on a BMJ. Showed up an hour late for the music contest. Came in second anyhow. I won 2 weeks at interfaith camp, where I was sadistically beaten by boys of all races and creeds.
Listening to Brain Damage, and yeah, we're playing some music, we're playing some Radio Moscow, we're playing some Woody Allen, all that kind of thing, because well, when you walk into the studios of WUSB, you got to adjust to some major differences in temperature. So it's about 100 degrees in here, 98 in the shade, and what better way to start things off, right? Now, if you want to see a reggae show, sort of, you know, they play music kind of like what you just heard, you can see Reggae Sunsplash featuring the Wailers and Andrew Tosh at the Westbury Music Fair. Arnie just ran in here with some tickets that for some reason he hasn't given away yet.
Giving them away.
We are giving them away. Practically giving them away. We definitely are giving them away for Friday, May 4th at 9 p.m. That's for the first person that calls in. Is that right? A random caller? Okay. We're not going to take your phone calls on the air yet, but we are taking your phone calls for this incredible offering, which all you have to do is call up, and if you're the lucky person, you'll be the lucky person, and you'll get tickets to see Westbury at Westbury Music Fair Reggae Sunsplash featuring Wailers and Andrew Tosh Friday, May 4th at 9 p.m. And we've got a great show coming your way. It's going to start up any time now, and we'll take your phone calls. We have a special guest coming up, and all kinds of other neat things. So stay tuned. Remember the number, 632-6901. If you want those tickets, you better move fast.
If I knew what I wanted, don't have the time. Shine.
Lines are open, 632-6901, area code 516. Call us now. Talk about anything you want. It's 20 degrees outside in Stony Brook. That's 68 on the Fahrenheit scale, but it's 28 degrees inside, which is 82 on the Fahrenheit scale. So that's why we all sound a bit sluggish.
It just went up to 84, Eric.
It just went up.
Inside here.
Incredible. You know, every year this happens. The first warm day, and it's about 30 times warmer inside than it is outside. And it's muggy, too. And all kinds of other things are in the air. Well, this is Brain Damage, the program that allows you to speak your mind, what's left of it in this day and age. And we have all kinds of fun things, as usual, to talk about. All kinds of bizarre surprises. 632-6901 should be kicking in right about now.
It should be kicking in right now.
Well, if you're going to play with that microphone, say something into it.
We're going to make it hotter in here.
You're going to make it hotter in here? How are you going to do that?
I can do it. One quote, physical plan.
Wait a minute. The man who is in charge of making it hotter in here is in this room. So if you can make it hotter, then I guess you can make it colder, can't you?
No.
Why not?
This is it.
What do you mean this is it?
This is a USB studio. It has
if
to be
we break down all the walls, all the cool air will come in and it'll be nice and cool.
You can't do that.
Why not?
I won't let you.
Some kind of stupid building code?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to crack that code.
No, it's not that anything to do with the building. It just has to be hot in here.
It has to be? What is it, some kind of a law?
The more you complain, the hotter it gets.
The more you complain, the hotter it gets. I'm going to go straight to City Hall on this one, folks. Straight to City Hall. You know, last year we had air conditioning. What happened?
It's not... Air conditioning doesn't come on...
Why are you speaking to the microphone?
No air conditioning until after Memorial Day.
Well, that's a dumb rule.
Or Labor Day. Whichever one is in September.
You know, yesterday was Arbor Day, I just found out.
Yeah. Did you plant a tree?
What's supposed to happen? That's what all those ridiculous trees are outside.
Yeah, Arbor Day. Bushes outside the
yard. And new fences, too.
Yeah.
There's fences and bushes and all kinds of things to trip you up.
After 12 hours, someone took it apart.
I'm surprised it wasn't vandalized as it was being put up.
They're not even finished yet.
Well, that's what's happening around here, folks. What's happening in Nuclear, Colorado? That's the big question. It's a prairie dog shooting contest. That's right. It's being looked on as a possible tourist attraction for this ranching town of 1,000 people. And the mayor has told the governor and others who do not like the idea to buzz off. Yes, the 10-ring gun club of Nuclear. All right. Does this place really exist? That's what I hear people asking. So let's just find out right here and now, okay? Oops, I dialed the wrong number. There we go. We'll just find out if there was such a thing as a 10-ring gun club of Nuclear. First, we have to find out what the area code is for Nuclear.
Do you have telephone, Miss Hill? May I help you?
Yes. Can you connect me to AT&T, please?
Sure.
One moment for an operator who can assist you. Thank you.
We can't call AT&T direct. It's for our own good.
AT&T, may I help you?
Yes, can you tell me the area code, please, for Nuclear, Colorado?
Which place in Colorado, sir?
There would be Nuclear. It's spelled N-U-C-L-A. Nuclear.
A second, please.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, right.
Sir?
Yes?
It's 303.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
I sort of suspected it was 303, but... always pays to be sure. Now, the next sound you will hear will be the cheery voice of a directory assistance operator somewhere near Nuclear, Colorado. direction. First, the ring.
This is Norm. What city?
Yes, Nukla.
Okay.
I'm looking for the number for the 10 Ring Gun Club of Nukla.
10 Ring?
Yes, that's right.
I don't show any business beginning 10 in Nukla.
I see. Maybe it's a generic listing, just Gun Club, Nukla Gun Club.
Okay. One moment. Nothing. I'm looking any business beginning Nukla, and I don't see Gun Club or anything similar to that.
Do you see any organization for prairie dogs, by chance? Such as a prairie dog civil liberties union or something?
No, I could go under, like, wildlife through the city or government and give you a number for that, but I don't know if they'd be open right now or not.
Okay, well, I'm just doing research for Monday, so, yeah, you can give me that number.
Okay, that's a division of wildlife for Nukla.
All right.
Here you go, thanks.
The number is 864-7838. Repeat, 864-7838. If you need further assistance, a directory assistance operator will return.
We don't need further assistance. I think we've heard to spread everything we can possibly hear. But we haven't heard the whole story, have we? Okay, we got the Prairie Dog Shooting Contest, run by the Ten Ring Gun Club of Nukla and neighboring Natarita. And they don't have a listed phone number. Maybe they don't have a phone at all because they're too busy shooting things. Anyway, they organized a contest recently to thin out the prairie dog population. It's a real problem out there. They say the burrowing rodents carry... Get this, folks. You know what the burrowing rodents carry? They carry bubonic plague. That's what they carry. And they dig holes that break the legs of cattle. It's amazing what goes on out there. Now, hoping the contest would be a tourist attraction, townspeople invited hunting enthusiasts and visitors to the depressed town for the July 14th to 15th event, where they estimate about 500 prairie dogs would perish. When animal rights advocates learned about the contest, they lobbied Governor Roy Romer and Representative Ben Nighthorse Campbell, his three names, persuading the two Democrats to oppose the event. But they did not get their way. The gun club held an open meeting Thursday night to decide the fate of the contest. Only three of the 318 people who turned out voted against the plan, and they were communists. Governor Romer, Congressman Campbell, buzz off, Mayor John Vanderpool of Nukla said after the vote. Mr. Romer and Mr. Campbell had said the hunt was a cruel spectacle and not a proper method of exterminating rodents. Animal rights groups and humane societies wanted to save the prairie dogs. No kidding. Oh, boy, this Associated Press here, they understate the obvious, don't they? Officials in Nukla and Natarita, in a remote corner of southwest Colorado, said they hope to make the contest an annual affair. The towns are so desperate for jobs that they tried unsuccessfully to lure a low-level radioactive waste dump to the area. Nukla is the place to be, quite obviously, folks. Nukla needs something to bring it back to life, said Thomas Langan, an elderly resident of the town. Sounds like a good person to talk to, actually. I don't care if it's a prairie dog shoot or a yuppie shoot, he said. Definitely a good person to talk to. Yeah, Doyleen Garvey said she was angered by city people who tell ranchers how to care for the land. They live in polluted cities where homeless people go, so why don't they put their energies to that, she said. Several speakers said the shooting contest was preferable to poison. I don't know why they're making that comparison. Yeah, it's also preferable to having your arms and legs chopped off, I suppose. Federal agencies... Oh, I get it. Okay, here we go. Federal agencies have banned the use of most poisons because they enter the food chain when eagles, coyotes, and other natural predators of prairie dogs eat the carcasses. I see, so it's preferable to poisoning the prairie dogs, not just to poison in general. One of the three people who voted against the shoot, Catherine Hess of Nukla, said she was not against shooting prairie dogs but had shot many herself. But I don't like the circus, she said. It's not right. That's the story, folks. That is the story from the Associated Press, all about shooting prairie dogs in Nukla, Colorado. And you got to ask yourself, well, you know, maybe there's not that much else to do out there, you know? Imagine being in a town in the middle of the country. You know, we take things for granted here in New York, Long Island, Connecticut. We've got a lot of diversity within easy reach. We've got the city. We've got the ocean. We've got certain kinds of trees and certain kinds of... of semi-mountainous areas around. But what if you live in a place where not much happens, not much happens at all, you know? If you've been watching the Twin Peaks show on TV recently, that sort of gives an idea of what a town could be like when not a whole lot goes on. In fact, there's an article in the Times today about Twin Peaks. Apparently, this show, directed by David Lynch, who gave us such masterpieces as Eraserhead and A Grandmother and all these other weird films, seems like it's not doing as well as it was doing a couple of weeks ago. In fact, the headline says, Twin Peaks in cloud as viewers diminish. Far from achieving the blockbuster status that seemed likely after the show's initial high-rated broadcast, Twin Peaks now faces some serious questions at ABC about its long-range prospects. An 18 share nationally, that was down 3 share points from the week before, down 9 points from its first Thursday episode, excuse me, and down 15 share points from the audience total that had made the 2-hour Twin Peaks pilot the highest-rated television movie this year. Well, never mind all that. In interviews yesterday, some production executives associated with the show, who asked not to be identified, criticized ABC's decision to schedule the series to compete with Cheers. Not only is Cheers a top-rated show, it does especially well among 18 to 49-year-olds, who are also the main audience for Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks is an hour-long gothic murder mystery serial set in the Northwest, produced and directed by David Lynch, the theatrical filmmaker perhaps best known for the movie Blue Velvet, which is, of course, the one I didn't mention. Even with the audience decline, the show has done well for ABC, but an executive at a rival network said he thought the show had at least one more downtick in its run. It's a demanding show, said the executive, who also did not want to be identified. People can't follow it easily if they haven't been watching all along. Twin Peaks has peaked. Robert A. Iger, president of ABC's entertainment division, who will decide whether to order more episodes of the program for next season, declined to be interviewed yesterday. Asked about reports that Mr. Iger decided last week to renew the series, an ABC spokesman said yesterday that the report was completely erroneous. The spokesman, Bob Wright, the network's senior vice president for public relations, said, "We have 4 more episodes to air before we make our decisions about what shows will be on the fall schedule. Bob will wait and see how the numbers are the next few weeks." Mr. Wright added that executives probably would not switch the time period for the show before it ends on May 21st. The third episode... What did I do with that? Oh, there it is. Third episode in the Thursday night period lost 14% of the audience that had tuned in a week before, and that audience had dropped 30% from the show's first appearance on Thursday night the week earlier. One Twin Peaks production executive said he was frustrated with ABC's schedule of the show. The show is being banged around on Thursday night. If ABC had put it on Wednesday night, it could have built it on its initial success. ABC has put the show at risk. As the show's popularity fades, the economic risk of adding more episodes rises. Because Twin Peaks is a serial with a continuing storyline, it is more difficult to cancel in mid-season than other series. Typically, a network renews a series for a new season and orders 13 episodes. The network pays an average of $850,000 an episode for an hour-long drama. If a network broadcasts only 6 episodes and then pulls the show from the air, it risks losing about half of its investment, some $6 million. So far, Twin Peaks has been both an artistic and economic success for ABC. Even with its recent losses, the program has improved ABC's rating in its time period by more than 30%. So, a production executive associated with the show said, "We think ABC is going to bring the series back next season, but we aren't really worried about it. If ABC doesn't pick it up, another network will. We have been assured of that." So, that's the latest on that series. Amazing the things that are going on in the spring of 1990. We've got a special guest we have to get a hold of, and it involves our own kind of Twin Peaks serial here at WUSB. If you recall, last week at 11 o'clock we aired episode 1 of The Tripod Family, and tonight we're going to be airing episode 2. And interesting thing, looking at the ratings, they come out Monday morning, we looked at the ratings, and they shot up by about... what was it, about 250%? 250% at 11 o'clock, and then they declined again 250% at 11:05. So for that five-minute period when the tripods were on, more people were tuned in than any other time during our broadcast day. It was the most incredible thing. Apparently, word has spread about this cereal, and I'm glad because, you know, it was against my better judgment to put it on the air in the first place, as I've said many times, and I will go on record as saying it's still against my better judgment. The tripods are, of course, kind of a surrealistic look at life in suburbia, done as part of a radio drama of the early 1980s, 1981 to be exact. And the complexities, the heartbreak, the drama, the passion, it's all in there, you know, it's all in that 5 minutes every week. Get misty-eyed just thinking about it. But we have a whole pile of episodes yet to come, and we're only up to episode number 2 this week. But we have a very special guest, and in fact, she said I could call her right about now, out in California, just outside of Hollywood. And of course, I'm talking about Blanche Forthright. Yes, that's right, Blanche Forthright, who is the actress who played Kathy Tripod on the series, The Tripods. And I guess we can just get on the phone there and give her a call. Yeah, let's do that. She's going to chat with us just for a few minutes before we actually air tonight's episode of The Tripods. And that's Blanche Forthright's phone ringing right now. Is that not incredible? I think that's really amazing. So we'll be talking to her about the series. Yes, she's probably running across her luxurious apartment now to get the phone. I sure hope she remembered, because it would be awfully embarrassing if she didn't. Did I mention Blanche Forthright played Kathy Tripod? I did mention that. Okay. Back in 1981, and there's reports that there's going to be a new Tripod production coming up soon. Hopefully she'll be able to tell us that if she does, in fact, answer the phone. Oh, boy. Why does this always happen to me? I thought I made it very... here we go. Oh, no. Not a machine.
Hello, this is Blanche. Oh, no. I'm otherwise occupied right now, so would you kindly leave your name and phone number, and I'll call you back just as soon as I'm free. Thank you.
Oh. Hi, Blanche. This is Eric Corley over WUSB. Remember, we talked earlier. We were supposed to do an interview right about now, but I guess you're otherwise engaged. I don't know. We're about to play the...
Hello?
Oh, Blanche, is that you? Is that you, Blanche?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. I was really sinking fast there.
I'm sorry. Is this Eric?
Yes. Hi. I was the person that talked to you before.
You're calling from the broadcasting station. I'm sorry. I was just down the hall doing the laundry.
Oh, I'm sorry to bother you.
No, you're not bothering me. I thought you called here a couple minutes early. I was just coming back when I heard the phone ring.
Well, I did say I'd call you at 5 to 11, but of course it's 5 to 8 your time, so maybe, yeah, that is a little early.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Anyhow, I just wanted to make sure I didn't get my delicates wrinkled, you know?
Well, no, of course, nobody here would want that either. Blanche, let me first of all introduce you officially to the audience. Of course, your voice has been heard many times over our airwaves as the voice of Kathy Tripod. But Blanche Forthright, you've had quite a notorious career dating back all the way into the early 1970s, and I'm honored to be speaking to you live on the telephone. I mean, I never thought this would actually happen.
Well, do you folks currently broadcast the Tripods from WUSF there?
Well, that's WUSB, and yes, we just started last week. In fact, at 11 o'clock on Saturday nights, we started broadcasting repeats of the Tripods. Yes, and I was just telling the folks that we looked at the ratings on Monday, and they shot up by an incredible margin at 11 o'clock, and they shot right back down again at 11:05.
Oh, that's very gratifying then.
Well, it's we think so, and we're certainly going to keep the Tripods going. It's not like a Twin Peaks kind of thing. It seems to be staying up there, not just going up and coming back down, you know. Yeah. So anyway, enough talk about us. Tell us what have you been doing over the past? Has it been 10 years since the Tripods came out? 9 years, actually.
Oh no, it can't be that long, dear. It's got to be. Who did you say your name was? Eric, right?
No, Eric Corley.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said your name was Eric Wright. I'm sorry.
No. a lot of people make that mistake for some reason. But what have you been starring in any other productions? Are there more productions in the world?
Well, you know, just some local stuff out here in California. You know, occasionally.
Uh-huh. Yeah. How's the weather out there in California?
Oh, it's just absolutely gorgeous. You know, I was down the beach earlier today. But you know, occasionally though,
Who was it in the family? Oh, the family, Tripod family, was originally from Big Bear. Big Bear City, you know.
Big Bear City,
Empire.
Of course.
You know, I get up there occasionally. It's pretty nice.
Uh-huh. In fact, interesting note, Jonathan Ogilarch, who plays Uncle Jonathan on the Tripods.
Well, that's right. He's the only character who played himself.
He played himself, that's correct. And I believe he also was in charge of arranging most of the financing for the episodes of the Tripods, which, as I understand it...
It was very notorious of him, but luckily all
expensive.
Of our bills got paid eventually.
Now, how much does it cost to produce an episode of the Tripods?
Oh, well, you know, it's been a while, and I wasn't too terribly closely connected to it, but, you know, there was an awful lot of involved for supplies and, you know, salary. I think Uncle Jonathan there, he ended up with quite a huge salary, even though he was only in a few episodes. I think it averaged out to be on the order of about $10,000 per segment.
That's $10,000 per 5-minute segment. Now, I guess some people would say that that's an awful lot of money, but I guess when you...
Oh, no. I must emphatically say no, dear. This was a high-quality production that we always did. And I think it was well worth every penny that was paid.
Uh-huh. But can you... I'm just curious, because I'm interested in radio myself.
Well, I would imagine you would be, because you're on the air right now.
Yeah, I guess that does make sense. But what would money go for? You know, what do you have to pay for to produce something like that?
Well, you know, things like tape,
uh-huh,
studio time, the gentleman that we got in there to do the sound effects, he was very, very, very talented. The gentleman that did the editing was extremely talented,
uh-huh,
and all the people that were involved, you know, salaries, you know,
so I guess
that sort of thing, rent,
$10,000 a
services too. You have to figure them in there. The stars get some perks, you know.
Uh-huh. So I guess $10,000 an episode really turns out to be a bargain when you look at it in the proper way.
Oh, of course, yes.
Uh-huh.
You know, and we didn't sucker the radio stations that carry this programming for that kind of money. You know, we almost gave it to them gratis.
I remember there was quite a pitch, actually, to get this radio station to carry it. In fact, it almost bordered on threats at one point. But we did carry it. We did air the whole thing. We're going to air the whole thing all over again.
Oh, well, that's really good that you're doing that, because I can look forward to more royalties then, I'm sure.
Yeah, I suppose, if our business manager took care of that. But that's not for me to decide here on the air. Well, tell me, are you prepared to talk about your time in the Betty Ford Clinic?
No, in fact, I thought we had agreed that you weren't even going to mention that at all.
Oh, sorry, that's right, I did say that, didn't I? Okay, I can't read my own handwriting sometimes.
I must emphatically state, though, that I am completely recovered.
Well, that's good to know, and there's talk that there are going to be more episodes in the works for the continuing saga of the Tripods, is that not correct?
Well, you know, as much as I'd like to be a part of it, I guess I have to say I'm a little bit skeptical. I'll believe it when I see it.
Uh-huh. So you don't know any more than we do at this point, I guess.
Well, I just know that Jonathan character has been working with some of the other talent involved in trying to get a reunion together, and then actually, if that works out, you know, sort of like a return to Gilligan's Island thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, the return to the Tripod family.
Uh-huh. Now, of course, Blanche, it's no secret that... Well, let's just say relations between you and the actor that plays Howard Tripod have been strained at best. Would you care to talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, Wilburn LaRose is a wonderful actor, a wonderful character actor, and I admire him professionally, but he is really...
I've been trying to get an interview with him for years, and I don't think I'm ever going to do it.
I'd rather not really talk about our relationship because, let's just say... Normally the stuff you read in supermarket tabloids is not true, but the stuff that's been said about the relationship that I have with Willie, a lot of it is true.
Well, I noticed that you do call him Willie. Now, does he insist that everybody call him that?
I don't think he insisted. It's just more of the demeanor of the man. Yes, I mean, you know, everybody calls him Willie. I don't think anybody really calls him, who knows him, calls him Wilburn.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, It's very strange. You know, I'm originally from out here in California, near the Hollywood area here, and he's from a small town in central Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And one would expect that with that kind of rural upbringing, he would have learned his, you know, would have learned his ABCs. He would have been taught the golden rule. But no, heavens no. Mm-mm.
Well, I suppose that might say something as to his success today.
Have you spoken with Willie? Oh, you say you tried.
No, I've never even been able to talk to his agent, actually.
You know, he's in the book. He's in the book in Bloomington, or Normal, Illinois, I think.
Does he still live there, or does he live out in California now?
No. His agent.
Oh, his agent, yes. Well, I don't like to pester the stars too much, because he is a very busy person. He was appearing in that Hall of Fame thing on TV, and I know that he's been doing some radio over in Japan, too.
That's one of the problems. You mentioned television, you know.
Right.
That's one of the problems I have with that man. He has been an actor, a radio actor, for many years, many, many years, and then he started doing television. It's like he abandoned the fraternity.
Well, you know, at some point, I don't know if you recall this, I think it was back in 1982, there was serious talk of bringing the tripods to network TV. But that fizzled out almost before it even was raised.
Well, again, I think that was that Jonathan character.
Uh-huh.
I don't really think it was very serious talk. He was just looking for more financial backing, that's all.
Uh-huh.
More money to put in his pockets.
Uh-huh. Well, of course, I guess it is the way things work out there, is it not?
Well, from time to time, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, Blanche, I don't want to take any more of your time. Anything?
What station were you saying you were calling from? USD? Was it WUSD?
No, WUSB.
Oh, that broadcasting station, yeah.
Right,
yes,
yeah.
In fact,
in Stony Brook, New York?
Stony Brook.
Right.
I think I was on a tour of the broadcasting station there one time, wasn't I?
I think I would have remembered if you'd been here.
Now, wait a minute. Now, didn't you and another fellow host this program?
Well, it was myself and Mike Uhas that did a program.
What was his name?
Mike Uhas, who did a program called The Voice of Long Island. And
then when was that on, son?
That was on Friday nights. And see, what happened was everybody had to draw a straw, and we wound up with the short one. That's how we wound up airing the tripods on our program. And it was originally supposed to be aired at 7 in the morning, but it instead wound up being aired at about 1 in the morning on our show.
Well, that's good, because 1 in the morning, your time would be, I think, 10 in the evening at my time in California. So that would work out just fine, except I don't think we ever actually picked up WUJB all the way out here.
USB. But, well, of course, you wouldn't be able to get it out there, but the people here on Long Island, people in Connecticut, had quite a strong following developed.
Well, tell me, now that you have it back on the air again, what has the response been? You say the Nielsen's went up.
Well,
not Nielsen.
They're
not
Nielsen's. They're whatever kind of, we don't get the regular kind of ratings. We get, like, a alternative,
yes.
I think the guy's name
is
Randy.
Because, you at WUFB are non-commercial, is it?
Yeah, we're non-commercial. So this guy Randy supplies us with the ratings. But that's beside the point. I've just been handed a note that we are getting several angry phone calls saying, where are the tripods? And Blanche, perhaps you would be kind enough to introduce the tripods. This is the second episode. And it might be interesting to note, too.
Now, wait a minute. Would you kindly refresh my memory there, please, son? Now, who was Don Topeka still involved in that production at that early stage?
Oh, yes. Don Topeka was involved throughout, was he not?
Oh, yeah, I guess he was. I'm getting kind of old here. I'm kind of forgetting, a little forgetful.
Well, actually, Blanche, I don't believe you've even turned 40 yet. But that's I guess people age fast out there in Hollywood.
Thank you. You're so gracious.
Well, I just happen to have your bio right in front of me. But the important thing here is that we remember the tripods as they were originally meant to be. Now, if in fact there is a reunion, a new set of episodes, I'd like to think that it would pick up where these ones left off. Now, again, to refresh our memory as to where we are now, we're at episode 2. And one thing I noticed last week, and I guess something we'll notice again this week, is that your voice, sort of similar to the character of Edith on All in the Family, but your voice is kind of lower in those opening episodes. Were you trying to find Kathy Tripod?
No, that's not it at all. When these were originally taped, what was it, back in 1981?
Uh-huh.
I was undergoing... therapy. Not exactly chemotherapy, but more or less like hormone treatments. That may have had something to do with the voice being a little bit lower back then.
I see. Well, that's all, another fascinating chapter to add to the saga of Blanche Forthright. And I do want to thank you for taking time out. You said you're doing your laundry right now. Is the laundry still going?
Wait, please, Eric, Mr. Corley there, please. Thank you. I appreciate all this attention, but the Tripod family was really, really an effort based on the folks that were hired by, at first, the three village tobacco farms,
uh-huh.
the whole entire production company, it's you're singling me out for this wonderful honor to speak with this evening. I appreciate it very kindly. You're so kind and gracious to do that, but please do remember that the Tripod family is a production of a variety of people. As I say earlier, it was not just the actors, it was the production people as well, the script writers,
uh-huh.
some of the most fantastic scripts that have ever graced radio waves were the Tripod family. And the people who did the sound effects, the other voices, the announcer, Don Topeka, as I say, a wonderful, wonderful gentleman, and especially the editor, the fellow who did the editing and the mixing. Oh,
uh-huh.
what a wonderful job he did, and I am just deeply honored to have been subjected to work with these people.
Well, I hear that many of those people have gone on to find fame and fortune in various parts of show business, and I guess that's a testament to the homespun quality, I suppose, is the best way of phrasing it, of those early years. And, of course, we do want to thank our local sponsors, among them the Three Village, the now-defunct Three Village Tobacco Farms, for allowing the program to come onto our airwaves locally. I guess there's really nothing more to say. We do have about 10 angry phone calls now of people that are demanding the tripods be on. And
What's the phone number? I'd like to call up on my other line.
Okay, it's 516-632-6901.
Okay, I'll do it.
Now, let's get ready at the point where we are about to enter into the drama. This is where Kathy has just received a letter from Big Bear City, I believe. After moving into their new suburban home, Kathy and Howard receive a letter from California, and that letter has some kind of a secret inside of it, and perhaps we'll find out on this episode. Blanche Forthright, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your busy laundry schedule, I suppose.
Oh, yes,
well,
you're quite
us.
Welcome, sir, and it's a pleasure to talk to anybody at the broadcasting station.
And we hope that that we'll hear your voice coming over our airwaves in new episodes of the Tripods, that we'll hear the voice of Kathy Tripod once more.
Oh, maybe I'll come up there and visit you sometime.
Oh, that would be more than enough.
Wait a minute, you know, I think I'm going to be in the New York area next week.
Well, that certainly would be nice. Perhaps
maybe I don't know if I can confirm this right now, but perhaps I'll drop in you there at WULB. I think I'd like to do that.
Well, yeah, just the station in Stony Brook. Just remember that WUSB in Stony Brook. And again, thank you very much, Blanche. We're going to go into the tripods now, and this is WUSB in Stony Brook. We'll be taking phone calls from our listeners later on, and. Well, without any further ado, I guess let's just go right into it.
Radio Free Long Island, in coordination with the Three Village Tobacco Farms, presents the Tripod Family. Join us as we follow one of America's most illustrious families as they struggle to find peace and happiness in the suburbs of Long Island. Last week, when we left our friends, Kathy had just received a letter from the Tripod's old hometown, Big Bear City. It's later in the morning as Howard, Pop, and next-door neighbor Charlie wait anxiously for Kathy to open the letter, and we hear Howard...
Who's it from, Kathy? What is it?
Yes, fill us in on the secret.
It couldn't be as bad as all that, Kathy. You look like you've been hit by an Entenmann's truck.
I'm sorry, I just don't know what to say.
Kathy, the only way we can help is if you tell us who that letter's from.
Oh, all right, Howard. It's from my uncle, Jonathan.
Jonathan?
Is that the rich uncle of yours who didn't want to lend us any money so he could stay in Big Bear City?
Yes, Pop, that's the one.
Oh, I don't think I care too much for him. I would have liked living in California much better than here on Long Island.
Do you folks mean to tell me that you had a rich uncle out in California and he wouldn't help you save your house in Big Bear City?
Well, that's just part of our story, Charlie. Jonathan had a lot of other things to worry about back there.
I can't think what those things could be, Kathy, unless you mean running his illegal gambling operation in Los Angeles or trying to figure out a new way to cheat a large number of people with one of his business enterprises.
That's right. He had an obligation to help us, and he let us down. And we're his own family, too.
Well, Kathy's really the only one related to him.
I don't think we should be getting so upset. I mean, all this was long ago and far away. We can't change the past. We're here on Long Island to start a new life, and... I think we should do that.
Yes, Kathy's right. Enough of this bickering. Let's talk about something else.
Well, you might be right, but I still think of the guy's a bum.
I knew a guy like that once back when I lived in the Hamptons. He was a mean old geezer if I ever saw one.
What was he like?
Well, you know how good neighbors are always borrowing things from each other and forgetting to return them.
Sure do. You've had a lawnmower for 2 weeks now.
Oh, I keep forgetting to bring that over. I'll get it now if...
No. Don't listen to Pop. He's just feeling a little cranky today.
Yeah, a little more so today than usual, I think.
You can keep that lawnmower for as long as you need it, Charlie.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Anyway, this guy I knew out in the Hamptons would always forget to return the stuff I lent him. At least that's what I thought. It turns out he was selling all the stuff I gave him, and with the money he made, he bought a Winnebago and took off cross-country. And I never heard from him again.
Oh, wait a minute, Charlie. My Uncle Jonathan may be a bit of a scoundrel, but he's not that bad.
I guess relatives always stand up for each other. It's one of those unwritten rules, I suppose.
Oh, of course.
For instance, if my father was a mass murderer or a bank robber or something, I'd still feel obligated to stand up
for him. Now, wait a minute! What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Well, that was just an example.
Please, let's change the subject. I don't know why we're talking about this.
Yeah, there's no need for us to be at each other's throats.
Some son you turn out to be, calling his own father a bank robber of all things.
Pop, I didn't mean anything by that.
Yes, Howard was just using you as an example.
Right.
You know, it's really amazing how much trouble this silly old letter is causing. I wish it had never come in the first place.
You know, Kathy, something just crossed my mind. You've been holding that letter in your hands for a while now, but you still haven't opened it.
Oh, I totally forgot about it.
So did I. Open it up.
Yeah, let's see what the bum has to say for himself.
Well, Kathy, what does it say?
It says, "Dear Kathy and family, greetings from Big Bear City. I hope you're all enjoying your new home on Long Island. I'm pleased to announce that I will have some free time this week, and I'll be able to visit you the day after tomorrow. See you then. With love, your Uncle Jonathan. P.S. I want to talk to Howard about my newest business enterprise."
Well, I wonder what that could mean.
It means that he's not through cheating us yet. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind when he gets here.
But don't get carried away, Pop. Remember, he is Kathy's uncle.
The day after tomorrow. I better start getting his house cleaned up.
Wait a minute, Kathy. Does it say on the letter that he's coming out the day after tomorrow?
Yes. What difference does that make?
I think I see what Charlie's getting at, Kathy. Let me see the date on that letter. Just as I figured.
What is it, Howard?
That letter was dated 2 days ago. So when Uncle Jonathan said he was coming out the day after tomorrow, he meant the day after yesterday.
So that means...
That means he's coming out today.
And so, as Howard, Pop, Kathy, and Charlie discuss Uncle Jonathan, the doorbell rings in the Tripod household. Is it Uncle Jonathan? And if so, will he try to hoodwink the Tripods once more? Tune in next week when we'll hear Charlie say, "Oh boy, here comes trouble." That's next time on The Tripod Family, presented in coordination with Radio Free Long Island and the Three Village Tobacco Farms. This is Don Topeka.
Okay, it is a radio call-in show, I know, so let's take some calls like we're supposed to do. That was an emotional episode there of the Tripods, and brings back a lot of memories for me. Blanche is off the phone now, but she did promise she'd drop by at some point in the next couple of weeks, and that would certainly be nice to have the true voice of Kathy here in the studios. That would be... Well, I think at least three people here would faint, certainly. I wouldn't be one of them, but I'd come close. Our phone number is 632-6901, and there's all kinds of neat things we could be talking about now, like, hey, this spring weather, you know? That's why I'm playing this music now, because this music reminds me of spring for some reason. I don't know why. I bought the record when it was winter, but it's just springtime music, I suppose. And there's a lot of neat things going on. You know, it's, I guess, the second really warm day. Yesterday was the first really warm day. You feel kind of different, you know? You walk outside and the heat hits you, and certain smells and odors and things like that, they just kind of surround you, you know, and you get sensations, you get memories, you get feelings of the way it was a year ago, 2 years ago, this time. And it's always particularly good the first couple of days. After the first couple of days, it gets kind of boring, but these are the days, the highlights, you know. No spring at all, just straight into summer this year. Huh? 19 degrees Celsius, and that's 66 on the Fahrenheit scale, but it's nighttime, you know. It's going to be... Well, here's a weather forecast. How about that? There's a weather forecast here. What do we got? Sunday, partly sunny with a 40% chance of afternoon showers or a thunder shower, my favorite. High in the upper 50s, low 60s. Oh, it's not too warm, is it? Yeah, Susan, hi.
Hi.
You were one of the people crying at hearing the tripods.
It's a very moving experience.
It certainly is. Certainly. I can understand that. I didn't mean to make a fool of you on the air or anything like that, but it's... A lot of people, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are crying for various reasons.
It just, like, reaches in and grabs you where you really, you know...
Maybe don't want to be grabbed, but yeah, it reaches in and grabs you anyway.
That's, right, exactly.
That's what we're here for, folks, to reach out and grab you.
Right.
Sometimes you don't know we're going
to
do
it. That's exactly why I'm here at the radio station, to reach out and grab all of you.
Oh, I thought you were going to reach out and grab me. Grab this fortune cookie. You want me to open it? Is that it?
Mark, would you be absolutely surprised if it starts snowing in like 2 days?
I wish it would. You know, that's the kind of person I am. I like weird, strange, unusual things to happen. I was saying, Twin Peaks isn't weird enough, you know? That's why it's failing.
The
weather is weird. It's because of the ozone and the global warming and all that kind of, and Reagan, all that.
And Bush.
Not yet, but Bush soon, yes.
Just think about it.
Bush hasn't had enough time to do the damage that Reagan did.
But before Bush came into the office, it didn't snow and get 90 degrees in April at the same time.
That's true. You could blame it on Gaddafi, too, couldn't you?
Well, he was around before, but Bush wasn't really around before.
When did Gaddafi come on the scene? Nobody seems to know that. He's always been there. Yeah, he's always there.
You
know?
Born with him there.
Amazing. We've seen some pretty unusual people serving various offices. Ayatollah Khomeini, Gorbachev, Reagan.
You have not seen anything yet.
Oh, wait a minute. Is that a hint of some sort?
No,
are you planning on leading a country or something?
No. I think it's
Bhutto?
Pretty good.
Gandhi? Gandhi again? Another Gandhi?
I really think it's going to get even odder.
Really?
I think they're going to be more, what's the word, economists leading almost every country in no time.
What would an economist...
Business people who are extremely business-minded.
Okay, but what effect would that have on a country?
Well, if people are thinking about money and thinking about profit, why are there like three microphones here and I'm standing over this one?
I don't know. This is a special microphone.
It makes me sound more intelligent.
But
if people are money oriented, profit oriented,
right?
Then what is that going to do for all the other things that are not in the interest of profit? Social.
So throw them into the garbage can.
Okay.
Sort of like what you have in Penn Station, eh? Imagine Penn Station spread out across the whole nation. Hey, good line for a rap song, folks. It even rhymes. I don't know how I do it. I just occasionally come up with these things. Well, 632-6901, sorry. Oh, fortune cookie, of course. Here we go. The sound of a fortune cookie opening live on the radio here at WUSB. There we go. And you will soon be honored by someone you respect. I'd rather be respected by someone I honored, but I guess, who do I respect? I respect Willie Mays. Yeah? I respect Paul Newman. I respect my dog, Walter. Is he going to honor me? Maybe he will. That would be nice. Anyway, 632-6901 is our phone number, area code 516. And I keep saying that, and I don't go to the phones, do I? Well, that's because I want to set the mood here. Talking about spring. All right, here's one thing I'm gonna read, and then I'll go right to the phones. How's that? It's in today's Newsday. Yeah, I read the papers, folks. I go through the papers and look for all this fun stuff. They want to make a town slogan, okay? And this is for Riverhead. Don't you know what they want to call Riverhead? They want to call Riverhead the Big Potato. I'm not kidding. This is true. You can look it up. The Big Potato. That's what they want to call it's the winning entry in a contest to come up with a new catchphrase and logo that's supposed to be used by merchants and store windows and all kinds of advertising. The Big Potato. But a lot of people don't seem all that ecstatic over this idea, and officials of the contest admit they are backing off how widespread the use of the slogan might be, since initial reaction seems to be one of stunned surprise. Riverhead Chamber of Commerce President Curtis Highsmith said, "Well, it's different, very, very different. Maybe it'll grow on you." Patricia Frankenback, owner of the Riverhead branch of the Southampton Uniform Shop. All right, and one of the prime promoters of the contest said, "We're no dummies around here. We aren't revealing who the judges were. Besides, when was the last time anyone walked down Fifth Avenue or Park Avenue and saw an apple tree?" Hey, that's a good point. That is a good point. Why do they call it the Big Apple anyway? I don't know. The committee will sit down shortly and go over the whole range of entries, both slogans and logos, to decide which might be used where. One idea called for a T-shirt we could have made up that would be showing a potato with a top hat and maybe a cane. Oh, boy. One town official thought the slogan inappropriate for 1990. He said, "Maybe 30 years ago we were the potato capital. Back then there were 60,000 acres planted. Now we are down to less than 6,000 for all of Long Island and dwindling as we speak." Well, maybe Riverhead is not the big potato, but I'm sure that's not going to affect the people who live there, right? Of course not. 632-6901. All right, let's see who we have. Good evening.
I'm considering that you are the station that represents the university.
Uh-huh.
I just have a grievance to air about the university itself.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I'm not putting it down academically because I think it's a great school, but as a high school senior, and I'm looking into schools, I don't think I'd like to live on campus just because it looks like a slum. And, you know, I'm not putting down the school. I'm just putting down the way it looks. Have there been any efforts to clean it up in any way?
Well, now, are you referring to the way it's kept up, or the architecture, the way it has started?
Not the architecture, because, you know, all SUNY schools that I've looked at are basically the same in terms of architecture, in terms of just the way it's, you know, kept. You know, I've been living here for 17 years, and it's been basically the same dirty mess.
Uh-huh.
Has there been any efforts to?
Well, you know, I don't know, you probably don't remember back in the 70s, this place was called the Mud Capital of the East. Nothing but mud everywhere you looked, and at least that's all been replaced by concrete now. But,
I know, you know, I have nothing against concrete. It's just, you know, when taking tours of campus, it's just not nice to look at, and I'm not putting it down in terms of the way the school, well, maybe it's a representation of the way the school's run, but, you know, I'm saying that it's a great school, but I just wouldn't want to live on campus, and, you know, that's a consideration.
Well, you know, I said it before, and I'll say it again, you can't judge a book by its cover. You know, it's what's inside those buildings that really count.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, some of the buildings look kind of weird, but there's a lot of interesting people here and a lot of interesting ideas. And, hey, you got us, you know. we've got all kinds of weird things going on inside these walls. You have to wonder.
Are you a student-run radio station? Are you a student? You sound older.
I am older. I was a student. It's student-run, but we have people participating from all throughout the community. It's a contagious kind of thing at a university, you know. You have to wonder why a university is a place where action always occurs in times of national upheaval. It's because that's what people are thinking. And as long as you got people thinking, and I can assure you there's people thinking here on this campus.
Definitely.
As long as you got that, it doesn't matter what it looks like. In fact, as long as you can unite behind some people and have friends and just do things together, as long as it's not a health hazard, the way things look won't really enter into it that much. And plus, it gives you something to build on. You know, you can make it better. You really can.
Yeah, well, as I said, you know, I'm not one to judge, you know, a book by its cover, but it does take into consideration the way the campus looks, because, you know, I've seen other schools, and I don't want to compare it to other schools, but they have looked nicer.
Right,
and,
well, this is a state institution. It doesn't have nearly as much money as, you know, as a lot of the private schools. But, you know, you might find this interesting. When Ward Melville donated the land for this campus, he wanted the entire campus to just be nothing but little red brick buildings, sort of like our humanities, our physics buildings.
Uh-huh.
And he was quite upset when he saw what people did with his land. The Health Science Center, I think, was the equivalent of Satan coming to Stony Brook. It's a fun place. It really is. It's hard to describe unless you actually participate in it.
Yeah. I know you're probably biased when I ask you this, but did you enjoy your years at Stony Brook?
Well, you know, I enjoyed my years at Stony Brook, but not really for the academic reasons, which is a shame, really, because I'm starting to get more into the academic things now. It's weird how when you have to be academic, you don't want to be academic, or when you don't have to be academic, then you're into it.
Right.
I don't know how that works, but the
can
thing
I
is,
ask you what your major was?
My major was English, and it hasn't really done me a bit of good since then. What's that?
You said it didn't do you a bit of good.
Well, Not really, no. You know, but then again, I didn't go for an English major because I wanted to make money as an English major. A lot of people seem to think that's the only reason to go to school, and that's a big mistake. You go to school to learn things, and English was my best subject, so that's why I did that.
Yeah.
You know, but I certainly, you know, I've learned a lot, I experienced a lot, and, you know, I'm the person I am today because of this place, no question about that, and that's what happens. That's what a college should be. It shouldn't be, you know, a place where you learn how to make money. It should be a place where you expand your mind and meet people, meet new cultures, things like that. And Stony Brook is such a multicultural place.
Definitely.
You will see that.
It seems like you turned out okay, so...
So far, you know, we're hoping.
Well, there's, you know, still time left to see what happens.
Yeah, there's
certainly... I'm very so, and are you the same person that... I guess this was maybe last year, you had called up Wisconsin, or you were looking through a phone book of Wisconsin or some state...
It sounds like something I would do, but do you remember what happened?
No, I don't actually. You were talking to a friend of yours on the phone, and you were flipping through a phone book, I think
uh-huh.
of Wisconsin, and just reading the names alphabetically. You said it today.
I don't remember doing that, but it sounds like something I would do.
I remember it distinctly, but I just thought I'd bring that up.
Wow, that's scary. We read the phone book on the air, eh?
Yeah, it put me to sleep. I mean, it was soothing, you know, I fell asleep.
Well, maybe it was a public service for, like, getting people to sleep. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
There has
okay,
to be
well,
a
thanks,
good reason.
You know, for taking the time to listen to me.
Okay, thanks for calling, and let us know what you decide in the end, eh?
Yeah, okay, I'm still deciding, but I appreciate you talking to me.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Sure. 632-6901. Good evening.
Good evening. This is Simon.
Hi, Simon. How you doing?
Been skirting the issue.
Okay, Simon. Tell me what the issue is.
The prairie dog situation there in Colorado.
All right.
The people are still hunting prairie dogs. It was different when the Indians hunted prairie dogs for a reason. They used to cut them up and use them to catch big grizzly bears. It's different. Prairie dogs for sport. Yeah, it's another animal rights activist thing.
How many, I guess there really aren't that many prairie dogs in Long Island, are there? I've never seen one. What do they look like?
Well, they look like opossums, I'm sure, but they're probably more akin to raccoons without the stripes.
Without the stripes, right.
Yeah.
That's, and they burrow down into holes in the ground, right?
Yeah. That's it. They burrow down into holes on the ground, but they should have the right to go to Graceland naturally. And not, you know, now that the Indians are being taken care of, so to speak. Oh, my goodness.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. Well, so what do you suggest people do out there in Colorado to get tourists to come over there?
Shoot apple trees.
Shoot apple trees.
Yeah. Shoot plum trees. Shoot anything.
Okay.
I want to be a plum.
All right, just don't shoot prairie dogs. I see your point. Thanks for calling. 632-6901. That's a raging controversy, isn't it? How about this? A bomb in a package addressed to the Reverend Pat Robertson exploded yesterday at the headquarters of his Christian broadcasting network, injuring a security guard. The guard had cleared the mailroom of all other employees only moments before, and no one else was hurt. Federal and local officials would not give details, saying that to do so might jeopardize their investigation. But Frankie Abagili, a spokeswoman for the network, said that all packages arriving at its headquarters were routinely x-rayed as a security precaution, and that one x-rayed today, or yesterday actually, bearing a North Carolina postmark, was considered suspicious. The guard, Scott Sheepers, was summoned, and the bomb exploded when he opened the package, she said. So they say, hey, Scott, there's a bomb here. Please open it for us. That's what it sounds like. Mr. Sheepers, 33, was taken to Sentara, Norfolk General Hospital. He was accompanied there by Mr. Robertson. Mr. Sheepers was in stable condition with shrapnel wounds to the left leg, said Rhonda Hoover, a hospital spokeswoman. Mr. Robertson, who was a candidate for the 1988 Republican presidential nomination, said the package had been addressed to him. This could be part of a pattern of attacks against evangelical Christians, said Mr. Robertson. He noted two recent attacks, the explosion of a package bomb at the home of the Reverend John Osteen of Houston, and an arson fire at the Indiana recording studio of Sandy Patty, a gospel singer. The Houston package, like the one that exploded today, or yesterday, I'm sorry, bore a North Carolina postmark. Mr. Robertson, whose 700 Club TV program is seen by an estimated 965,000 households daily, said he did not plan to tighten security. And wasn't he involved in some kind of scandal, too? I can't keep up with all these preachers, but I think he was involved in some kind of scandal. That's another interesting thing that's going on. It wasn't reported in very many places. 632-6901. That's our telephone number. So we have the sounds of the rebels underneath us with soca mix and all that. Because it's springtime, you know, and I feel like playing this, and I feel like doing other springtime things. I don't know what else people do in the spring, but around here we just kind of hang out outdoors, and eventually I'll get around to doing that, right? 632-6901. Good evening.
No, you're the coolest.
Huh? I'm sorry, if you can't understand somebody the first two times. Good evening.
Hey.
Yeah, what's up?
What's going on tonight?
You tell me. You're out there. I'm in here.
What's this stuff about the Christians? They were blowing them up now?
Apparently, there's some kind of trouble in paradise or whatever. I don't know.
Maybe somebody out there, well, they're going about it wrong, but I'd like to blow up a few of them, but I don't do those things, unfortunately.
Well, you restrain yourself. That's the important thing.
Because,
you see them on TV and you, you know.
Well, like I always say, you know, these theologians are always, what are they saying? Are increasingly recognizing the social and moral disaster a contraceptive mentality can lead to.
Now, wait a minute. Those aren't your words. What are you reading from?
I'm not reading. Those are my words.
Those are your words?
Oh, I picked these things up from my my literature.
You're speaking poetry there, man. I can't believe it.
Thing of it is, that this mentality has caused and continues to cause environmental havoc as the population increases, as I say on and on. It's time for the church to realize that the planet is finite and cannot support nonstop population growth, says the doomsayer.
Well, I don't think anybody will disagree with you there.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I mean, anybody reasonable, let's put it that way.
Have you ever... Well, you're a big protester. I've gone to these abortion clinics when you got all these dingbats running back and forth saying pro-life.
There was an abortion rally in Washington today, was there not?
Oh, no. Gee, I wish I could have went. I've talked to some of these pinheads, and you wouldn't believe it. They think God's going to wave his magic wand and everything's going to be all right, so we can be as irresponsible as we want to be. We don't have anything to worry about, according to them. Isn't that nice?
You know, where do you draw the line, you know?
Well, I wish I could live in that fantasy land.
I mean, if God's going to take care of everything, then what does he need us for?
Well, I know I'm an atheist, but the thing of it is, I wish with all my might that I could be just like them, because then I would have no problems. I would be totally in another world. I would think that everything is rosy and everything's going to be all right. Boy, that would be great to live like that.
Well, now, I don't like to do this, but we're saying them a lot. Who exactly are we referring to?
Well, the people that call in and send money to these Christian stations, for instance, and these dingbats that they step on you and they step on the WPLR in the morning when I'm trying to listen to the radio. I hear all these things about Jesus in the morning. Boy, do I get irritated. They step on your station sometimes.
You can, wait, I know there's a religious station at 99.1 in New Jersey. You mean you get them instead of PLR?
There's one very close to your station. Sometimes it steps on it when I'm in the car.
Right, well, that's a station in Smithtown, I know.
To me, that's a bunch of hogwash. You know,
well,
you gotta,
again, I've said this before. I have no problem with that kind of thing on the air. I just don't like it when they take up valuable non-commercial radio space with something that is actually selling a product, because that is what they're doing. They're selling their brand of religion, and they do it 24 hours a day. And
yeah, it's
not fair. It's really not fair. You know, it's like I could open up a station that does nothing but talk about detergent. As long as I don't have a commercial about detergent, but I talk about how great detergent is as a rule, I can put that station in the non-commercial band. It's not fair, you know, because there's a lot of people like people at USB, people at PKN, and other stations that want to do real radio, you know. They're not even a radio station. They just simulcast another station in New Jersey, so they don't even exist.
Well, they sell hope. You see, people they don't have enough strength in themselves. That's where you got to find the strength in yourself.
Sell hope. You know, that tells you where they come from, right there. You know.
Well, you know, people fall for it. You know, I hear it all the time. Well, I was on drugs and God saved me. You save yourself. You do it yourself. Doesn't anybody have any faith in themselves?
The guy that just got executed said that he's found God now, and not a moment too soon, right?
What's the matter with everybody? Don't they have any strength in themselves?
What?
We're not encouraged to have strength in ourselves, you know, because when you have people who have strength in themselves, they become a big threat. You know, individuals are the biggest threat to any government. I always say that. So it's not encouraged.
Explain that to the audience and me.
Well, you want me to explain that?
I don't understand what you mean by that.
I mean, people who think freely, openly, individually are the biggest threat to any kind of a government, and I'm sorry, every government that has ever existed wants to control the people as much as possible.
Well, I believe that we do need some control personally because, you know, people get out of hand. You need certain regulations. Look what happened to the banking system because Reagan deregulated. Look at the mess we got now.
I'm not denying the need for any of this, but I'm telling you the way it is. That's why people are not encouraged to be individuals. You gotta be an individual in spite of everything. But you can't be encouraged to be an individual by everybody. You've got to do that yourself.
You see the little article on Newsday I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I actually got nauseous. They wouldn't allow a picture of John Lennon nude or something?
Oh, I got that. Wait a minute. I pulled that. Why don't I have it in front of me? Hold on. Keep talking while I find it.
All I hear is rustling papers.
Well, you keep talking. We'll hear you.
You saw that too, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that made me absolutely nauseous. I can't believe the mentality of these people. What's wrong with nudity?
All right, I found it. Here we go. Nude photo of Lennon gets hook. Okay, this is the story, folks. This appeared in the paper. And, yeah, this is definitely... We talked last week about censorship in art and the Mapplethorpe thing and all that kind of nonsense. Here's where it's going, folks, the next step. A photograph of John Lennon showing the late singer nude in a fetal position was pulled from an art exhibit by museum trustees who said it clashed with the show's theme. The portrait, taken in 1980 by photographer Annie Leibovitz, shows the ex-Beatle next to his wife, Yoko Ono, who is fully clothed. Trustees at the city-owned Muckenthaler Cultural Center decided to remove it from an exhibit that opened last Saturday. Beverly Gunter, chairwoman of the center's board of trustees, said Monday, "The trustees decided the work was not appropriate to the exhibit's theme, heroes, heroines, idols, and icons." The Contemporary Arts Center in Cincinnati and its director were indicted April 7th on misdemeanor obscenity charges for an exhibit of photographs by the late Robert Mapplethorpe that included homoerotic images and naked children. "I realize it might raise some questions, but it has nothing to do with the Cincinnati issues," Gunter said. Norman Lloyd, the show's curator, said he wanted to include the Lennon photograph because it illustrated an argument by the late philosopher Joseph Campbell that the process of maturing is itself a heroic act. "The photo shows that Lennon has not grown up," Lloyd said. "It's a very elegant photograph and shows that struggle people have of breaking away." So it's come to this. It's come to this where they've actually latched onto pieces of art because no matter how you interpret it, it is a piece of art. And they're banning it. These people, I don't care what they say, they're afraid to have something like this because of what's going on in Cincinnati. Is that the way you interpreted it?
Well, I got sick I got sick to my stomach because I draw. I don't like to call myself an artist, but I look at a lot of art. And these people are just so far gone. They're so narrow. They're so far. I don't know what in the world is going on in their minds. I can't even comprehend it. What is so wrong with any nude photo? Any?
I know exactly. it's we're going back into the, what do they call that period of time? Oh, back into the Victorian age, I guess.
Maybe, but I saw the thing where they censored that Cincinnati art, and they somebody wrote in the letters to the editor that got in there something about a girl with a dress up and she had no panties on or something, and it.
Oh, that's it then. That's it. I mean.
Wait a minute. Ooh. Now hold it. Maybe you know he focused on this, and I think the person that wrote that letter made that photograph pornographic. It might not have been pornographic. People make it that way. I don't. What is wrong with maybe seeing a nude child? I've seen art with nude children in it. I don't understand. Maybe there's something wrong with me. I'll tell you. You make it pornographic. You do by.
Well,
of course, there's a line. I mean, there is a point where there's certain things that I would consider pornographic, but, if it was a sexual thing where there was a man of my age doing a sexual act with a child, that
I don't think anybody would debate that. But this is the ruling last week with the I forget what the ruling was called. It's basically child obscenity or child pornography or something. It's not really child pornography though, because the law that the Supreme Court voted they voted to support a state's right to have a law like that, where a state could ban possession of pictures of naked children because that could be interpreted as being child pornography. And I said, fine, if you're gonna have something like this, you gotta test these laws to see where they're really coming from. So instead of having photographs, why not have paintings? Paintings don't have a particular person. They're fictitious people. If they start banning paintings, then you're going to know where these people are really coming from, and that we're in a lot of trouble.
Well,
or statues or things like that, you know, because there's no victim, you know. If they're really concerned about the victim, let's test them. Let's see if they leave that kind of thing alone.
It's really sticky because, I mean, what about a medical like I said, I draw, and there's books full of poses. There's books with poses galore for me to draw from, nude photos, and they have children in them, and they have old men, they have old women, they have people in their 20s, 30s, all ages, because the body changes, you know, and if you're going to be a good artist, you know, you draw all these different things, so you might have nude children in that. So what age are they going to take those out of these books? You just can't do this. It's ridiculous. You can't stymie an artist.
That's true. And once you start mixing government and art, it's going to get real messy. And these are definitely interesting times coming ahead. Maybe torrential times, I suppose.
It all started with 7-Eleven with Playboy magazine, which was ludicrous.
Yeah, that still gets me upset, you know? Who are they to ban magazines and tell you that you can't read this?
It's such a high-class magazine, as far as I'm concerned.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a high-class erotic magazine.
It's, you can have your opinions on it, but when you start banning things, I don't think you're protecting anybody.
All right, well, let's give somebody else a chance to yell.
All right. Thanks for yelling.
Yeah, good night.
All right, 632-6901. Good evening.
How's it going?
Okay, how's it going with you?
Not bad. I want to refer to your comment before of you saying that people who think like individually are the biggest threat to government and what have you.
Yeah.
Are you saying that in a negative sense?
I guess I'm saying it more negatively than positively. Let's put it that way. I mean, there are some. I mean, government cannot survive with a whole bunch of people second guessing it every step of the way. Obviously, but I don't think we as a race can survive without all those people. So it's kind of a catch-22 situation.
If you don't have second guessers, then they're going to have total control, and then it's going to be like Russia. Then it's.
Well, you see, it's not, you know, we're learning how Russia really is, and I think there really isn't total control anywhere in the world at this point. But I don't think there's a single government around today that doesn't have a few people inside it that want total control. You see what I'm saying?
But you have to have people thinking of other ideas. You got to be open to other ideas. You can't just be set on one way of life, because then we'd still be in the Stone Age then.
Right.
So, all right, that's basically all I wanted to say. Nothing much else, all right?
Okay, where are you calling from?
Sable.
All right, well, keep listening.
Okay, bye-bye.
632-6901, good evening.
Good evening.
How you doing?
All right. Who's that that person you were talking to during the Triffid segment?
What, the actress, you mean?
He was an actress?
You're talking about Blanche Forthright. Who are you referring to?
That freaking boar. Who was that?
Who? I mean, we have lots of boars around here. Which one are you referring to?
the one that talks like this!
You must be talking about Blanche Forthright, because that sounds kind of like her.
Blanche Forthright. Right.
Are we talking about the actress that plays Kathy Tripod?
Right,
yeah. We talked to her in her California home.
She has a very unusual accent.
Well, we talked about the hormones and all that kind of thing, yeah. But I don't think we need to dwell upon that, do we?
No. I had a suggestion.
Okay.
That I had a couple of old sayings that I thought would bring new light, maybe new light to this show.
I'm all for that. Go ahead.
All right. Here's the first one. What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Okay.
All right. The other one is, what was the other one? I had another one. Oh, some other show. Oh, something about art. Oh, yeah, yeah. You were talking about art. I'm talking about art renaissance for the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
What do you mean?
Well, I feel that there's going to be an art renaissance for the 90s.
What makes you feel that?
Well, there's a lot of suppressed music and artists today, with Soho being modernized by Trump and a general influx of new rich aesthetics moving in. And I just feel that there's going to be a new cultural movement somewhere.
Well, I sure hope so, because we're long overdue for that. And, yeah, if you walk through the streets of New York, you see this thing's happening there. And hopefully, you know, if there's any good to be gotten out of all this this censorship that's been hitting us, it'll wake people up and realize that, hey, art and freedom are things that we could lose if we're not careful, if we just sit around and let people make up these laws. So, yeah, let's get some militancy going in the art world. We could certainly use it.
Well, we could certainly start with the bridges.
The bridges?
The bridges, the Queensboro Bridge.
Uh-huh. Well, what do you want to do to that?
Beautify it. Make it a piece of art.
I don't know if it could stand it, but that thing is falling apart.
Absolutely. It needs total restructuring.
As do all the bridges in
New York. Absolutely. Because all the traffic and, you know, all the wear and tear that it's been through, I don't think it'll last a day. I don't think it'll last a day more. And I bet you, one of these days, mark my words, that old bridge is going to fall right in the drink.
Okay, well, we've marked your words, and we'll be looking forward to that day.
I hope you don't follow me off it.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
And I'm going to take the tunnel from now on. Good evening.
So, I was wondering, can you tell me, is the power surge going to be on tonight?
Is the power surge going to be on tonight? I don't know. Good evening.
Eric.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing? How are you?
All right. Listen, I have a question to ask you.
Go ahead.
In December, we invaded Panama, right?
Yes. Sorry?
Manuel Noriega?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to him?
Where's Manuel Noriega? That's a good question. It was supposedly, I heard that he was going to be on trial sometime in 1991. He's got to wait a whole year to go on trial. It's most incredible. I guess the networks are trying to get rights to it or something, but...
I was wondering if they would publicize it, maybe like they did with the Iran-Contra trials, I believe.
It would be nice, you know. It makes for some good good television, that's for sure, because the Iran-Contra hearings were eye-opening, certainly. It was fun to watch these things going on. And... yeah, it's weird though that we're actually talking about this, that we're saying the trial of Manuel Noriega, because it's a year ago we would have thought that was completely unthinkable, that we could actually go into another country, yank out the leader and put him on trial in this country. Just, you know, we've forgotten about it. I mean, that's not right, you know. If Israel or Iraq or somebody came over here and took out somebody they didn't like and brought them back there,
the whole world would be up.
Right, but we get away with it because we're big and we can do these things. I just don't feel comfortable with that. And a lot of people have forgotten, you know, hey, this guy has you know, been placed in our country. We're going to put him on trial. I don't care what he did, but he should not be in this country. I don't think it's right for us to go and get people and bring them over here.
Yeah.
I just don't think that's right.
And if they went into every country to get every drug lord, I mean, forget about it. If they did what they did to get every drug baron, you know?
Uh-huh.
About it. But listen, I'm waking everybody up in my house, so I gotta go.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
All right, take care.
We've been getting a lot of people that talk too loudly, and people actually complain in the house. They complain to us. Say, don't encourage Tommy to call up and be so loud on the phone. I'm sorry, folks. That's what we're here for. 632-6901, area code 516. That's our telephone number, and by calling that number, you can become a part of... what we do here on WUSB, which is try to stimulate your mind a bit. Good evening.
Hey, Kerr.
Okay, some people's minds can't be stimulated. Good evening.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's up? How you doing?
You doing, man?
Okay, how are you?
I'm doing good.
All right, what's up?
I just want to see your dick, man.
Sorry?
Yeah, you loser.
Uh-huh. Good evening. I see the power surge crowd is out, eh? Well, folks, power surge isn't on tonight. What do you think of that? Ha. Yes. Well, it's not on in the normal sense. We're going to play Frank Sinatra music. Yeah, we are, folks. We're going to play Frank Sinatra. And we're going to play music from the 1950s too. We're going to do that. So be careful. Be very careful, because we can do that if we don't get respectful calls. That's all we're asking for, folks. It's just, you know, not overly respectful, but just not moronic, you know? It's not much to ask for, is it? No. 632-6901. Show us that you've got something inside your head, right?
Young man.
What do you want?
You're making a big assumption.
What's my assumption? Here, talking to the guest microphone.
Okay, from the beginning. Young man, what makes you think Frank Sinatra never did heavy metal?
Oh, boy, I knew I'd get in trouble by even bringing this up. Okay, bring me the Frank Sinatra heavy metal record.
We have Frank Sinatra doing a TV theme show song.
I'll play it.
I'll get it.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm going to regret even bringing this up. Maybe I should have said Barry Manilow or something, right?
Again.
Again, oh boy.
Now, well, I'm not saying they did, but I'm saying what makes you think that they didn't? Maybe Frank Sinatra is a closet heavy metal fan.
Well, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. I don't know. I shouldn't mess up with Frank Sinatra and heavy metal, because those are two groups you don't want to get together, you know?
Why not? You're assuming.
What's wrong with that?
You're stereotyping.
What's wrong with stereotyping?
You're thinking just because he swings a microphone.
Everybody stereotypes.
But you're different. I mean, we are different. We are all about not.
No, we're all the same. That's the whole point of stereotyping.
We're not the same. Yes, you're trying to tell me I'm like you?
Yeah, we're exactly the same, Susan.
Oh, great.
I know everything you're going to say right before you say it.
Okay. I don't look like you.
See, I knew you were going to say that.
I don't sound like you.
Petty points, Susan. Petty points. 632-6901. Good evening.
Mr. Brady.
Good evening.
Yes, just tell that girl she's a loser and if the power surge doesn't come on.
Good evening.
Yeah, hi, is Pat there? Can you tell Pat to give me a call?
Good evening.
Yeah, how's it going? I find it very despicable that you're not having the power surge on.
Good evening.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
I'm doing just fine.
Listen, I was wondering something.
Yeah.
I was disagreeing with you about what you said about the way, like, it's like we shouldn't go and snatch like other political leaders out of their positions and bring them to trial in court. You know, in this country, you know, it's impossible to take that into consideration. That, you know, that we're so right, you know, and like they're so wrong. But I mean, but when they're threatening, you know, other people's lives, you know, I mean, I don't think that's personally right.
So what are you saying? That it was right to go in there and do this?
No, I mean, what I'm saying is, in certain circumstances, it should be okay for us, you know, as to go in. I mean, if the people are crying for help, don't you think we should?
Well, were the people crying for help, or did we just say they were crying for help? You see, it's all in how you cover it and how you interpret certain things, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess the media hyped it up as turning it to, you know, another Vietnam, I guess. You know, it's like another police action.
Yeah, well, that's basically it, you know. You gotta understand. You know, we went into a foreign country and we basically just took somebody out and brought them here. It's just that in itself is too much for me to handle, I think.
I guess you're right. You know, I think it should have been done is, I think his own people should have put him on trial, and that should have been handled that way, and not in the sense of, you know, I guess you're right. I guess, you know, it isn't our saying, you know, who is doing so-called wrong. But don't you think? I mean, he was supposedly, you know, smugged, you know, involved with all the drugs that are coming into this country. Don't you think that involves us just a little bit, you know? I mean,
well, look at it this way. President Bush is responsible to a great degree for the Contra War in Nicaragua, correct?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay, so does that give Nicaragua the right to come here, kidnap him, and bring him there to stand trial?
No, I guess not.
And we're talking about a lot more direct snuffing out of lives than drugs, I think. But it's an interesting point. You know, I just wish we'd debated some more. I wish we wouldn't just say it's a given. Noriega's in this country, he's going to stand trial. We should still be saying, is it right or is it wrong? And I don't think enough people are.
Well, it's like I could say, like, the, see, like, I'm pro-American, but like one big problem I think that we got is that, you know, like, even though we wave the flag, we're like so right and everyone else is wrong.
Uh-huh.
No matter what, you know, I mean, it's like red, white, and blue or not, and I think that's kind of wrong.
Right. Well, the trick is, you know, you don't listen to the people that say I'm pro-American and you are not, because you know, Why give them that? When all the countries in Eastern Europe are overthrown in the last few months, the movements that did it carried the flag because they were the true patriots. And I think people that always are questioning what's going on should be carrying the flags, too, because they're true patriots, are they not?
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right, well, we'll leave it at that, sir. Thanks very much for calling.
Okay, no problem.
All right, good night.
Bye.
And that's going to pretty much do it for us here tonight on Brain Damage. I guess there's a power surge of sorts coming up, right?
Yeah, sort of a power surge.
All right, sort of a power surge. Sort of a power surge.
Can I just ask you one question?
Okay, Susan's going to pester us some more. Go ahead.
Right, just one question.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Did you hear about the Chinese people at Kennedy Airport?
The Chinese people that got kidnapped but didn't really get kidnapped and supposedly were just trying to get smuggled into the country so they could be citizens?
Oh, they found out?
I don't know
for
anything
sure?
about it.
Right.
I don't know the first thing about it.
Great show, Rick.
Thank you. We'll be back again next week. And thanks, everybody, that called. And a special thanks to those of you that didn't because, well, you're just a special people that we don't want to hear from, right? Yeah. Okay, well, good night, everybody. Stay tuned for the power surge and have a lot of fun and all that kind of thing, right? Yeah. Good night.
Of ascendancy over others. Surge, to rise and fall actively. Power, physical might, mental or moral vigor. Surge, a sweeping onward like a wave of the sea or emotion. Power, force or energy used to do work, the time rate at which work is done. Surge, a transient, sudden increase of current in an electrical circuit. Power surge.
Caution, this item may be considered offensive.
Undefined.